your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, a great day for civilization, President Trump declares. Why? Because Mike Pence, in surely the greatest triumph of his vice presidency so far, has successfully negotiated a ceasefire with the Turks. Now, this is not a negotiation with an enemy. Turkey is supposed to be a NATO ally of the United States. What does this mean? Good news for the Turks, good news for the Kurds, maybe. There, in fact, are celebrations in Kobani, one of the centers for Syrian Kurds. They are actually firing weapons in the air. Not a good idea, by the way, but don't try this at home. But they're firing weapons in the air in celebration. At least it means that the 150,000 people who have been displaced from their homes in Syria, Syrian Kurds almost entirely, that those people will not be joined by hundreds of thousands more, at least for 5 days. It is a 120-day ceasefire. President Trump was highly enthusiastic about it. And again, I think that watching the entire presentation by Mike Pence, he even took a few questions. He's over there in Ankara, Turkey. And he had been negotiating for some 8 hours with Tayyip Recep Erdogan, the president of Turkey, the dictator of Turkey, really. And we now have on the line one of the Democratic leaders of Congress who had helped to pass that piece, that resolution yesterday about Syria, which seems to have produced a result that can have everybody breathing a little bit easier. Adam Smith, who is chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, is also here to speak with us about Hong Kong, where there are other resolutions that he has helped to shepherd through the House of Representatives. Representative Smith, thank you so much for joining us on what I know is a huge, busy, and eventful day.
Thanks, Michael. I appreciate the opportunity, as always.
Do you feel some sense of relief at the ceasefire that was just announced by Vice President Pence?
Well, not a great deal. I mean, first of all, the ceasefire is dependent upon the YPG agreeing to withdraw. Now, I have not seen the information yet on exactly where they're agreeing to withdraw from. I think it's pretty clear at this point, however, that the YPG was not part of the conversation. So we are dependent upon them agreeing in order for this to be successful. So I'm worried about whether or not they will. So that's the big caveat to this agreement that we're waiting to see the results on.
And yesterday in the vote in the House of Representatives, over 2/3 of the Republicans voted with your Democratic side of the Congress in a resolution very clearly disagreeing with the president about his withdrawal of the troops. How many Democrats voted on that resolution on your side?
I don't know how many voted. I don't think any Democrat voted against it.
That's what I thought. I knew it was 354-60 was the final vote.
Yes.
The new Wall Street Journal had an editorial that said Kurds 300 in the vote in the House, Kurds 354, Trump 0 or 60.
Yeah.
Pardon me.
Right. Yeah, look, and that's the big problem here. And that's why I would understand. I mean, on the one hand, I think this is a difficult situation, no matter who's the president. You know, we had to work with the Kurds to defeat ISIS in Syria and Iraq. We had no other partner. So the agreement that President Obama entered into to work with the Kurds was what was necessary to initially get the defeat of ISIS. But Turkey wasn't going to like it because of the historical problem they have with the Kurds. And there's no simple way to solve that. I think the most troubling thing is the way the president sort of bounces all over the place here, that sends a very inconsistent message to friend and foe alike. I mean, on the one hand, there's this urgent, we have to sanction Turkey to stop them from doing this invasion. On the other hand, the president spent much of yesterday talking about how, you know, we don't care about the Kurds. You know, what are the Kurds to us? It's their fight, not our fight. What are we doing there? I mean, what does that mean? I mean, the inconsistency of the message makes a difficult situation that much worse. But I don't think it's really fair to say that President Trump gave Erdogan the green light to do this. I just think they didn't do as good a job as they could have to prevent it from happening.
Where do we go from here? I mean, what it all depends on what the Kurds and their leadership decide to do, does it not?
Absolutely. I mean, in the short term, whether or not this ceasefire works is totally dependent upon the Kurdish reaction. And I got to tell you, we had a brief today from Secretary Esper and Chairman, Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Milley, talking about this very issue, and they don't envision the Kurds accepting this. You know, whatever Turkey may have thought of the terrorist threat from the Kurds in Turkey prior to this, the Kurds are going to fight for this land in Syria. Even if Turkey comes in and occupies it, you know, the Kurds are not just going to walk away. So long term, I think there is no apparent path to ending that conflict, and that's a problem. And overlaying all of that, you know, our biggest concern in the region is to tamp down ISIS and any other violent extremist group. And now that we've, you know, basically sent the Kurds into the arms of Assad, who is our partner in the region in doing that? What does that partnership look like? And at this point, I don't think the administration has a clear idea of how to go forward with that effort.
Well, there was a lot of those people who spoke up on the House floor, and I actually listened to some of the debate on the resolution, made the point that it was going to be very difficult for America to find future partners for joint endeavors. And part of what's so important here is in Afghanistan, in Iraq to some extent, and certainly in Syria, we have been able to get non-Americans to do most of the fighting and dying. And the problem is, how are we going to be able to do that in the future when you turn around on an ally like we did here?
Yeah, and that, when I was at the White House meeting yesterday in between the food fight, that was the point that I was trying to make, was the president is correct in saying that, you know, the U.S. going overseas to fight somebody else's war, or the way I like to put it is, you know, dropping 100,000 U.S. troops into some foreign country and thinking that we're going to be able to fix the situation is dead wrong. But what we have been able to effectively do is what you just said. We have partnered with local forces. And the president also described, you know, our troops in Syria as basically, you know, engaging in a police action. Well, no, that's not what they're doing. They're training and equipping a fighting force that can fight a battle that they care about, but that we care about too. And right there, they're fighting ISIS. We also have a lot of partnerships in the Horn of Africa with Ethiopia and Kenya and Rwanda and others to fight off AQAP in that region. In West Africa, we're partnering with Niger and Mali and others to combat extremist elements primarily flowing down from Libya. You know, in Afghanistan, we're doing our best to try to develop a partnership there. But you're right. The whole point of all this is to train and equip people to fight in large parts so that we don't have to, but also because an indigenous force is vastly more effective. They know the region. They have credibility in the region that an outside force like the U.S. military doesn't. And when you take a partner like the Kurds and just let the bus run over them, whether you threw them under it or not, if you just let the bus run over them, then my goodness, say things like, oh, the Kurds weren't with us in World War II, so what difference does it make?
They weren't with us at Normandy.
Right, exactly. You know, I mean, you know, the president could have credibly said, look, you know, I love the Kurds. We're not going to war with Turkey over the Kurds. And he would have been absolutely right about that. He said, we're going to do everything we can to stop Turkey from coming in, but it's a regional issue that we do not necessarily control. That's fine, but why go down this childish, screw the Kurds, you know, that's just ridiculous. And it undermines U.S. interests, as you point out, not just in that region, but any place else that we're looking for a partner.
Which should be all around the world. I'm speaking to the chair of the House Armed Services Committee, the Honorable Adam Smith of the state of Washington. And I didn't know that you were at that. I'm sure it must have been really a lot of fun to be at that meeting yesterday with the president, Nancy Pelosi. Do you mind my asking you about that? I know you can't say everything, but she left the meeting and Steny Hoyer left with her. Is that right?
Right. And Chuck Schumer.
And Chuck Schumer. Did anybody else leave or the rest of you stayed behind?
The rest of us stayed. There were four other Democrats there and I think five or six Republicans, and the rest of us stayed.
What was the mood on the room? I just looking at the faces in that photograph and the faces of some of the generals and some of the people on the Trump side of the table, it looked like it was a very uncomfortable moment for everybody.
Well, it wasn't so much uncomfortable as it was sort of embarrassing. I will say this. Both members of Congress, and I have very good relationships with the administration people, certainly Secretary Esper, General Milley. You know, I also work with Mick Mulvaney a lot, the president's lawyer, Pat Cipollone. We actually went to college together. We're friends from way back, and I respect them. There's a general feeling. It's like, can we please just get down to business here and get past sort of whatever this is? So, yeah, it was a little bit awkward, but we also gamely tried to steer the conversation back to the actual issues that we need to work on. Let me just say, I mean, look, this is part of the problem I have with President Trump, just the way he talks to people. I mean, it just, you know, I mean, I've been insulted by many people, and it doesn't bother me that much. I stay focused on the work that needs to be done, whatever the other person is saying. But by and large, it makes anything you're doing more difficult when you are belittling and insulting the people that you're trying to work with, whether you agree with them or not. At the end of the day, that's what the president didn't like, that, you know, Nancy was critical of his policy, so he went off on her. Well, you know, it's kind of the way this game is played. You know, we disagree, but we try to work through it for the good of the country.
Do you recall what? Because I've read several accounts of this. This is kind of like that classic movie Rashomon that's described differently by everybody who was there. But what was the comment that actually provoked the Speaker of the House, who is third in line for the presidency and one of the most powerful people in the country and therefore the world? What led her to walk out on the president and most of her colleagues?
Well, it was a series of things. And frankly, you know, I was sitting next to Hoyer. The reason you can't see me in that picture is I was just to the left of Steny Hoyer, who was just to the left of Nancy. And, you know, Steny said more than once during the first 10 minutes, this is pointless. We should leave. Because the president came in with an attitude. He didn't like being criticized over the Syria policy. And obviously, he's not thrilled about the impeachment. I mean, right off the bat, I mean, the first thing he said was, well, I don't know why we're meeting. You guys won this meeting, so I guess we're here, but I don't know what the point of the meeting is. Like, yeah, okay. And that was a little bit of, so, and it sort of devolved from there.
Did she make a sarcastic comment about, well, if with you, Mr. President, it all leads back to Putin, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. But that was... A lot went down before that.
Uh-huh.
Schumer, you know, attempted to say, what are we doing here? Why did we abandon the Kurds? You know, what's our plan in Syria? The president took offense at that. You know, the speaker sort of reiterated that point, and that's when, you know, the president basically said, well, what do you know? You're just a politician. And the speaker was like, well, you know, yes, I am. I don't mind being a politician. So he upped the ante on the insult and said, well, you're really just a third grade politician. And by the way, he did say third grade instead of third rate. You know, and, you know, a couple other insults were thrown out at that point. And that's when the speaker said, well, you know, I look at this and it all leads back to Putin with whatever you're involved in.
Ouch.
So, yeah. And then things sort of devolved from there and they left.
But again, you talk about a third grade politician. It sounds like a third grade confrontation between Now, where do you go from here? President Trump tweeted out today that Nancy's not right upstairs. She had a total and complete meltdown. She's a very sick person. We all should pray for her. When the president of the United States has called you a very sick person, this probably doesn't make it easy to work together, on the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, which would be nice to get confirmed, or the Hong Kong legislation that resolutions that you're pushing.
Well, let me say this about that. First of all, legislatively, I've been doing this for a while. And believe it or not, there actually is a skill to being a politician and a legislator that is learned over time. Mainly, you have to work with very difficult personalities in a certain set of circumstances. And I do love a challenge. So, you know, what we have to do is whatever's being said back and forth, we have to work together. And there's a series of issues. I'm trying to pass the defense bill right now, which is an enormous piece of legislation that has massive implications for a whole bunch of different things. We also need to pass the appropriations bill so that we don't shut down the government, and a few other things. So there were a lot of people in that room who want to work together. I mentioned some of them, and I'm certainly one of them. And I stuck it out and, had a conversation with the president about, the specifics of the policy. So, basically where you go from here is you move past the insults and work on the substance. And there are a lot of us that are committed to doing that. There is politics in this, absolutely. It is my firm belief and the belief of my Democratic colleagues that we need a different president. All right. And I don't apologize for that. There are many others who feel differently, who think, President Trump's great. We don't want someone new around here. And that fight's going to happen. All right.
Yeah, but that happens with the normal electoral processes. That doesn't necessarily mean a vote on impeachment and then a trial in the Senate. Mitch McConnell is now saying before Christmas.
Yeah, that's a slightly different conversation. My point is, whatever the politics is going on, we're going to work on substantive issues as well. Impeachment, in our view, and I realize your audience is not going to be sympathetic to this, but in our view, impeachment really has nothing to do with next year's election and the campaign. Nothing at all. It has to do with our belief that no president should use the power of the office in the way this president has, and the belief that if we don't make a statement that says we don't approve it, then we are acquiescing to it. And we are saying that it is okay for this president to do it again and for any president going forward. So in our minds, and I realize, again, a lot of your listeners won't agree with me on this, this has nothing to do with the next campaign. And I'll tell you, and the speaker knows this, and I happen to be of the opinion as well, impeachment's not a good political play.
No.
Then that's why, in spite of that reality, it's just you can't have the chief executive putting pressure on a country like Ukraine to do what are purely political investigations.
Okay, what about that alternative that a number of thoughtful Democrats, it seems to me, have even talked about, like Bill Galston over at the Wall Street Journal, which is censure and then go ahead and try to beat him in November of 2020?
I think that's a plausible conversation, and I think we should have it. The only problem with that is that the president doesn't think he did anything wrong. He doesn't.
Yeah, but if there's a resolution of censure, I mean, I think he certainly got the message with your resolution on Syria yesterday, didn't he?
Yes and no. I mean, we did that resolution, but keep in mind, he spent much of yesterday talking about how, the Kurds weren't worth our time. Okay. Even while Pence is on the airplane, he's talking about that. My point on the impeachment thing is censure is okay, but by and large, you censure someone when we all agree he did something wrong. He agrees he did something wrong. He says, here, he doesn't think he did anything wrong. And he's absolutely going to do it again because he thinks that's just the way you do business. So is censure enough in that set of circumstances? But I'm with you. That's, the whole origin of the Move On group was censure and move on back in 1998.
Right.
With Bill Clinton.
And don't Republicans at this point wish we had done that? I think we do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And look, I mean, I think that's a reasonable conversation to have.
Speaking with Adam Smith, who is the chair of the House Armed Services Committee, one of the ranking Democrats in the House of Representatives. Representative Smith, I know that you are trying to make sure that the House sends a very clear message of solidarity with the protesters in Hong Kong. And defying the attempts to suppress any aspirations for freedom by the communist Chinese. And I salute you for that and for your hard work on behalf of the people of your district and the country at large. We will be right back on the Medved Show. On the Michael Medved Show, so much breaking news. There is allegedly a confession. It's not a confession. It's not that big a deal, it seems to me. But we will cover it. Mick Mulvaney, the acting White House chief of staff, admitted that the defense funding for Ukraine was held up because Trump wanted corruption investigated. He did not admit or concede that that Trump had done so because he wanted Biden investigated. There's also testimony today by Gordon Sondland, who was our ambassador to the European Union, who the mainstream media are celebrating because they say Sondland threw Trump under the bus. And he had given $1 million to help pay for the Trump inauguration and therefore was qualified to be our European Union ambassador. I tweeted about Gordon Sondland because I've been reading about him because he's a local guy from here in Seattle. And the one thing that I do think is worth understanding with all of these characters going up and testifying, and he testified basically all day today. It appears that he was testifying for 8 hours, something like that. And Gordon Sondland, if you look at his life, he's 62 years old. He has been part of Trump world. He didn't even support Trump in the campaign. He supported the Trump inauguration very generously. But he's an incredibly generous guy. He's given prodigious amounts of charity to hospitals, to parks, to schools, to feeding hungry kids, to dealing with homelessness, to you name it. He's there. And there are all these charitable institutions that have honored him because of his generosity, plus setting up a whole series of very profitable and very classy hotels. Sound familiar? Well, actually, these are very different. They're boutique hotels, and they help to save historic buildings. In any event, the one thing that I think is a shame is everyone's looking at Gordon Sondland right now and forget about the previous 59 years of his life. He's 62. The only 3 years of his life that anybody is interested in or cares about is the 3 years of his life he's worked with President Trump. And there it is. And President Trump today, he is going to do a rally tonight. I think it should be a huge festive rally. I am sure he will claim a great victory regarding the situation in Syria. There is a ceasefire. The ceasefire is supposed to last for 120 hours, which is, you can do the math, that's 5 days. And that's a time when the armed Kurds are supposed to get out of the way. As Adam Smith, the chair of the House Armed Services Committee, made clear, there is no formal agreement yet from the Kurds that they will get out of the way. We shall see. But President Trump had this to say when he was reacting to the pullout announcement that was made by Vice President Pence. President Trump was getting on board the helicopter for his trip to Texas for this big rally tonight near Dallas. And the reporter asked President Trump, did you plan the shooting after pullout announcement? Listen.
Mr. President, you're talking about all this shooting as though it was part of a plan. Are you saying that you planned for these people to attack each other?
No, but I do think this, David. I think it had to be an unconventional solution, because the conventional solution is to sit down, negotiate, and they've done that for 15 years, actually. More than that, I understand. And that was never going to work. But all of a sudden, when they saw and how nasty it was and how rough it would get 100 times worse than what was happening. But when they saw the level of nastiness, they said, let's make a deal. Everybody together, let's make it.
Uh-huh. Again, the deal right now is between the United States and Turkey, our NATO ally. And in fact, President Trump had great praise, I think undeserved praise, for President Erdogan of Turkey. Listen.
I think that President Erdogan's very smart. I think he wants it to last. He wants safety for his people. Look, say what you want. A lot of bad things happened to Turkey from that district, from that 22-mile stretch. A lot of people in Turkey were killed. So that's not fair. Nobody likes to mention that. This was a great thing for the Kurds. This was a great thing for Turkey. This is great for everybody. And frankly, the thing that I'm most happy about is that I took a lot of heat, but that we were able to do it so fast. I thought this would go on for longer. This was such a smart thing to get it done so fast.
Is President Erdogan still coming next month to the White House?
Well, now I would say that that would be very much open. I would say that, yeah, he would come. He did a terrific thing. He's a leader. He's a leader. He had to make a decision. A lot of people wouldn't have made that decision because they don't know. They ultimately would have made it. But what he did was very smart, and it was great for the people of Turkey. And they're lucky it was him that was making the decision, I will tell you that.
There was some controversy yesterday when Barack Obama, who is a former president, does not hold office, endorsed Justin Trudeau for re-election in Canada, re-election he should not receive and I hope will not receive because it's time for the Tories to take power. But for President Trump to endorse President Erdogan right now, is that really a good thing? I will tell you, there's such a contrast between President Trump and his comments and the Vice President of the United States, the Honorable Mike Pence, who made these comments when he was announcing the agreement he had just reached after 8 hours, literally that much of negotiation with President Erdogan. Listen.
I'm proud to report, thanks to the strong leadership of President Donald Trump and the strong relationship between President Erdogan and Turkey and the United States of America, that today the United States and Turkey have agreed to a ceasefire in Syria. The Turkish side will pause Operation Peace Spring in order to allow for the withdrawal of YPG forces from the safe zone for 120 hours. All military operations under Operation Peace Spring will be paused, and Operation Peace Spring will be halted entirely on completion of the withdrawal. Our administration has already been in contact with Syrian Defense Forces, and we have already begun to facilitate their safe withdrawal from the nearly 20-mile wide safe zone area south of the Turkish border in Syria.
Okay. This is, there is a lot that still has to be worked out. As a number of people have pointed out, there are hundreds of thousands of people, Kurdish civilians and tens of thousands of Kurdish military and paramilitary, who are still in that 22-mile area that Turkey claims wants to enforce their rule and that the Kurds consider part of their homeland. So this has not been entirely settled. Pence went on, and we will get to more of what the Vice President of the United States had to say. There's also this ongoing question of did Mick Mulvaney inadvertently make a concession that is going to make impeachment all the more inevitable? And then the question about Gordon Sondland and what he did say. We have a copy of his opening statement. And there's also much more, including a controversy in California where they are outlawing treating kids who pay for their meals any differently from those who are unable to pay for their meals. In other words, you get exactly the same food, same deal. Great idea. We'll get to that and more coming up. President Trump, exultant today, and I am sure that will be the tone, and it certainly is an appropriate tone. There's no question. Every peace-loving, reasonable, sane, even partially open-minded person has to think, well, it's a lot better today than yesterday. At least there isn't killing and destruction and bloodshed going on where America is powerless to stop it. We have a Vice President of the United States who, dispatched by President Trump, went out to Turkey and at least for 5 days, and one hopes permanently, the killing is stopped. And the American allies that we had apparently abandoned may not be abandoned after all, long term. President Trump, before getting on his helicopter for his rally in Texas, said that, yes, we are not forgetting about those 10,000 ISIS fighters who had been guarded by the Syrian Kurds. Listen.
Yes, we're going to have people that watch it, and most particularly, we're going to have people that are watching ISIS. We'll have people watching, and ISIS will be largely, again, controlled by the Kurds, because what a lot of people don't know, most of the areas where ISIS is outside of the war zone or the 22 miles. So ISIS will be, very few have gotten out. Most of them have been recaptured. And what's happened is ISIS is outside of the war zone. So that's going to be controlled very much by the Kurds with our supervision. He's going to be very happy. They've spoken to him. The Kurds are very happy. Turkey is very happy. The United States is very happy. And you know what? Civilization is very happy. It's a great thing for civilization. Thank you, everybody.
Can you talk to...
It is. It's a great thing. Do we have Pharrell Williams, Jeremy? Because it seems to me certainly appropriate with the mood and the announcement the president just made. Oh, in any event, we do have Mike Pence, who wasn't quite as happy and exuberant. He's just not. But he was actually very presidential and very, very reassuring, I think, to the whole world when he emerged from the long negotiations with President Erdogan of Turkey. Here is Mike Pence talking about what it is that Turkey had agreed to do and not to do. Listen.
Let me say this also includes an agreement by Turkey to engage in no military action against the community of Kobani. And in addition, the United States and Turkey have both mutually committed to a peaceful resolution and future for the safe zone, working on an international basis to ensure that peace and security defines this border region of Syria.
And that's something that the Turks have been pushing for a very long time. And if they can acknowledge that not every Kurdish military or paramilitary group like the Peshmerga, who were allied with us so closely in Iraq, that was a Kurdish militia that was extremely effective and actually showed some gifts at even self-government. And if the Turks can make a distinction between the PKK, which is a Kurdish faction they view as a terrorist group, and the other Kurds that they can live with in this safe zone where there are hundreds of thousands of them, then this ceasefire can last and be extended and can be a real contribution to world peace. Vice President Pence concluded this way.
In addition to the settlement today with the ceasefire, Turkey and the United States mutually committed to the defeat ISIS activities in northeast Syria. This will also include an agreement renewed today to coordinate efforts on detention facilities and internally displaced persons in formerly ISIS-controlled areas. Also, Turkey and the United States agreed on the priority of respecting vulnerable human life, human rights, and particularly the protection of religious and ethnic communities in the region. I spoke to President Trump just a few moments ago, and I know the president is very grateful for President Erdogan's willingness to step forward and to enact this ceasefire and to give an opportunity for a peaceful solution of this conflict that commenced 1 week ago. For my part, I'm grateful for the president's leadership I'm grateful for the more than 5 hours of negotiations with President Erdogan and his team that arrived at a solution that we believe will save lives.
There is an aspect of this that I think should lead people to be somewhat suspicious of news coverage. When I started monitoring the news this morning, the whole word was that Erdogan had reacted angrily to the letter that President Trump had sent out the same day that the Turks had begun their invasion. And there were news reports everywhere on all the major networks. Erdogan threw the letter in the trash. He had contempt for the letter. And it made it sound terrible. It made it sound, again, humiliating for President Trump. Well, it turns out he wasn't so ready to throw it in the trash. There had also been news reports that turned out to be false, that Erdogan was refusing to meet with Pence. Met with him for over 5 hours, as Pence just stipulated. And that Erdogan would only meet with President Trump personally. He does want to come to the United States, and President Trump now is moving swiftly to dismantle the sanctions that were going to be put upon Turkey. Now, again, everybody has to keep powder dry here and not be too hasty in putting everything away. There was another press mistake, and this is inappropriate because it found its way into a front page headline in America's leading circulation newspaper, one of the America's three leading circulation newspapers. Now, USA Today, where I have a column up at usatoday.com as a member of the Board of Contributors that you can check out about why impeachment is such an unwise policy. But in any event, the point in USA Today, they ran a column that Trump says that Turkey's invasion, not our problem. Now, he never said that. NBC News ran a retraction, a correction. And NBC News had done this, USA Today, I'm sure they will do a correction tomorrow from their headline. NBC News said a previous tweet misquoted President Trump saying Turkey's invasion into northern Syria is not our problem. He said they have a problem at a border. It's not our border. As well as it's not between Turkey and the U.S., according to White House transcript. According to White House transcript, well, Mick Mulvaney had a rare press conference today, and he actually said a couple of things. One was a slip of the tongue, maybe. It could have been what people used to call a Freudian slip when Dr. Freud was in better light. He seemed to suggest that Rudy Giuliani was in on that now notorious phone call with the president of Ukraine. That would be interesting. Another one of Rudy Giuliani's business partners arrested. There are now four total of his former business partners who have been either arrested or indicted. That's not good. And what exactly did Mick Mulvaney admit, if anything, the White House acting chief of staff? And what about this Gordon Sondland testimony? Is he really turned on Trump the way the press is portraying it? And then the California bill pushed by Governor Newsom to make it a crime to treat children differently, whether or not they pay for their lunch bills at school. They all get the same food. We'll talk about that and much more in this greatest nation on God's green earth.